Greetings and welcome to Season 2, Episode 2 of Theology and Sci-Fi, the podcast. I am your host, Derek Vitrell, and I'm so thankful that you have decided to join me today. Thank you, I truly appreciate it. Today we're going to look at something a little more recent than most of what we've examined on this podcast. We are going back to the screen, but this time to the small screen, to look at an episode from the Netflix series Love, Death, and Robots, the last episode of Volume 1, Zima Blue. Now, Love, Death, and Robots is rated MA for language, violence, nudity, gore, and smoking, so that's some pretty serious content issues there. However, this particular episode, Zima Blue, has none of those things. It has no language, it has no violence, no nudity, no gore, no smoking. It does not include any of those things, but pretty much every other episode in the series does. So I would feel comfortable personally even having my children watch this episode of Zima Blue. I don't know if I could say that for any other episode in this series or not, but this one episode is okay. So I decided in terms of content and also in terms of storyline, it would be something that would be worth us looking at. And I also was hoping to find something a little more recent. I think this came out in 2019. Something a little more recent for us to examine and for us to look at. And this popular series, Love, Death, and Robots, I thought maybe something from there can fit. And the story Zima Blue certainly fits something that is okay in terms of content and something that is also worth looking at in terms of storyline. So I'm going to say, if you're going to be looking at watching the rest of the episodes for Love, Death, and Robots, be warned. There are some things that are very violent. There is nudity, there is language, there is gore, there's all this other stuff that's going on in there. Some of them are pretty rough to watch. So that's just a warning here. But if you go watch Zima Blue, you're not going to have to worry about that. So that's why I decided to go ahead with this episode. It's just a short 10-minute story. It's actually a little less than that. The whole video is 10 minutes, including credits. So the whole story is only about 8 minutes long to watch. Again, it's found on Netflix, at least in the United States. I'm not sure about for our international listeners if this also will be on Netflix wherever you are listening to it. But if you don't have Netflix, you might want to get on that soon, borrow someone's password while you still can, because you might not be able to do that much longer, and go watch just this one episode, Zima Blue. Again, I'm not recommending the rest of the episodes from this series, Love, Death, and Robots, but Zima Blue is worth your 8 minutes of time to go and watch. And visually, it's just a really beautiful story. So with Love, Death, and Robots, most of them are animated stories. I think there's only three or four, perhaps, that are not animated, that are live action, but most of them are animated and done really well. I like the artistic design of this episode of Zima Blue. But they're just little short animated stories, you know, sometimes 8 minutes long, sometimes 20-ish minutes long. But again, there are many of them are problematic in content, but Zima Blue is not one of them, so we're going to go and look at this again. So this is not an endorsement for the whole series, just for this episode. And of course, a spoiler alert, if you have not seen Zima Blue, you will know all about it by the end of this podcast, by the end of us looking at this together. So if you're one of those who like to go and watch or listen to, watch or read or listen to, whatever it may be, whatever we're discussing before we get into it, I encourage you to go watch this now. If not, you've been warned, spoilers are ahead, and let's jump into this and take a look at this little story. And there's so much in here. There's such richness within this story that we'll dive into it and take a look. So Zima Blue starts with a reporter going to an island to see the unveiling of the final piece of artwork by renowned artist Zima Blue. That's what he calls himself. The reporter's name is Claire Markham, and she's been asking for years to interview Zima, but has always been rejected. Until now, Zima's actually requested to speak with her. And we find out that little is known about Zima's history. He started out as a portrait artist, but soon gave that up because the human form was far too small a subject, is what we're told. He wanted something bigger. He wanted something that would be grander, something more beautiful than painting people. Was just small about humans. He wanted something not so small. Subjects that were not so small as humans. So he's looking for something more grand. So what we see here, just to pause and already take a look at this, and just looking at the background of Zima, we see that he does not place a high importance on people, at least not painting them. He starts out as a portrait artist, but soon gets bored with it. He gets bored with people and doesn't think that people are worth painting or worth spending that amount of time on, he thinks that the cosmos, that creation, that something bigger, that something grander is going to be worth painting and not people. So he's looking for something more. He's looking for something greater. Well, in the creation account in Genesis 1, we are told that things are good. God creates things and they are good. But people who are created in God's image, after God creates them, after God creates people, we are told that people are very good. Listen to this from Genesis 1, verses 26 through 31. Then God said, "Let us make humanity in our own image to resemble us, so that they may take charge of the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, the livestock, and the livestock, all the earth, and all the crawling things on earth." God created humanity in God's own image. In the divine image, God created them, male and female. God created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fertile and multiply. Fill the earth and master it. Take charge of the fish of the sea and the birds in the sky and everything crawling on the ground." Then God said, "I now give to you all the plants on the earth that yield seeds and all the trees whose fruit produces its seed within it. These will be your food. To all the wildlife, to all the birds in the sky, and everything crawling on the ground, to everything that breathes, I give all the green grasses for food." And that's what happened. And God saw everything he made, and it was very good. Creation is only described as very good after people are created. Before, it's good, but now once people are created, it is very good. So Zema Blue should think that the best thing that he could paint, the most worthwhile thing to paint, is people, to do portraits, to capture the image of people. But he does not. He doesn't place that high importance. He doesn't think that people are worth that. They're not worth his time, his effort, his energy. He wants something bigger. He wants something more grand. But folks, I'm going to tell you, the pinnacle, the high point of God's creation is people, is creating humanity in his own image. So if you want something to spend your time and effort and energy trying to capture in a painting, I don't know what more you can have than people that would be worthwhile. But for Zema, he doesn't agree with that. Back to the episode, and with Claire narrating, we hear this. It was said that he started his art career in portraiture. But for Zema, the human form was too small a subject. The search for deeper meaning caused him to look further, to the cosmos itself. So Zema has not found meaning or purpose in painting people. He needs to look at the cosmos to find meaning? What does that mean? And where do you even turn if you're looking at the cosmos to find meaning? Can a planet give you meaning? Can you talk to a star? How does the cosmos answer questions that he may have? How can the cosmos give him meaning? Ultimately, it cannot. What Zema should have been doing is he should have been turning to God. He should have been looking to God for those answers instead of looking out to the cosmos. The creation's not going to be able to answer those questions, because those are questions only the creator can answer. But ultimately, Zema decides that he needs to go a deeper meaning, to look further out into the cosmos is where he's going to look for this deeper meaning. So he starts painting murals. He paints universes, night skies, nebulas, planets, stars, those kinds of things. But one day, Zema unveiled a painting with a blue square in the middle of the mural. A blue square. And then over the next several decades, the blue shapes in the painting got larger and more dominant. And eventually, he is just unveiling huge blue murals, painting asteroid rings, and then he goes on to do things like paint asteroid rings around planets in blue. He goes to paint part of planets themselves in blue, and of course the shade of blue that he is using is Zema Blue. That's where he gets his name from. That's the shade of paint, the shade of blue that he is using, Zema Blue. And he always paints things in that shade of blue, and only in that shade of blue, whether it's a giant blue mural that's taller and wider than a skyscraper, or whether it's painting a part of a planet in this color. That's all he does, is use this color blue. But why? Why Zema Blue? We will get to that answer. And then Claire says something else interesting in narrating about Zema painting asteroid belts and planets and all those kinds of things. And when he goes and does projects like that are so big and so grand, she says, It was a certain level of spectacle that made Zima truly famous, even to those with no interest in art. But fame was never the point. In spite of all his success, Zima was still unsatisfied. Of course he was. He is looking for meaning. He is looking for a purpose. He is looking for fulfillment in his artwork. He's looking for it out there somewhere in the cosmos. He's looking for whatever it may be. He may be looking for those things in fame. He may be looking for those things in money, but they are not found there. He's going to be unsatisfied with life if all he's doing is looking to his artwork and trying to get famous or trying to get money or whatever these things may be, because that's not where satisfaction is found. That's not where the longings of your soul can be fulfilled. Those things are only found in God. We all have something within us that has been called a God-shaped hole within our soul. Now, before exactly I explain what that means, we're going to jump back a little bit in history. We're going to look at a guy named Blaise Pascal. So we'll jump back to 1670 with the publication of Pensées by Blaise Pascal. Because while the term God-shaped hole is a relatively new term to describe something that is within our soul, this truth has actually been known for centuries. So Blaise Pascal is a 17th century philosopher, theologian, and mathematician. Perhaps he is best known for what is called Pascal's wager. So here, this is just a freebie. We'll just throw this in for the side, because this doesn't have much to do with it. But when we're talking about Blaise Pascal, it's worth mentioning what we call Pascal's wager. Now, Pascal's wager states that it is better to wager that God exists and to have it turn out that he doesn't than it is to wager that God does not exist and it turns out that he does. For if you believe in God and you are right, you have gained eternity in heaven. But if you are wrong, you have lost nothing. However, if you wager that God doesn't exist and he does, then, well, you have lost everything. So it's known as Pascal's wager. He's saying it's better to wager, it's better to live as though God is real and turn out to be wrong than it is to live as God is not real and turn out to be wrong. So it's a wager that's used as a means for people believing in God and being able to have faith, and how it can also be logical to have faith in God, because there is something to gain if we are correct, if God really is who he says he is in the scriptures. It is a fairly good argument to believe in the existence of God. It may not be a great argument to believe in a specific religion. Pascal is making the argument here for Christianity, that it would be best to believe that, and because if you're right, you've gained everything, and if you're wrong, you've lost nothing. But it is just an interesting wager there, the way that he states that it's better to wager that God is who he says he is than to wager that God is not who he says he is. So that is Pascal's wager. However, he's also made several contributions to the world of mathematics and other things. Really interesting guy. He made a lot of good contributions. However, in his book Pensées, which is translated to mean thoughts, Blaise Pascal writes these words in section 7 under heading 425. What is it then that this desire and this inability proclaim to us, but that there was once in man a true happiness of which there now remained to him only the mark and empty trace, which he in vain tries to fill from all his surroundings, seeking from things absent the help he does not obtain in things present. But these are all inadequate, because the infinite abyss can only be filled by an infinite and immutable object. That is to say, only God himself. Pascal, he writes of this infinite abyss that people have. This infinite abyss that people have within their souls, within their hearts, that they will try to fill with things from their surroundings, from the world, from creation, but all these things are inadequate. So we have something within us that we're trying to fulfill, that we're trying to get to fill this longing that we have for something that is missing, whether it's a longing for love or acceptance or peace or fulfillment or meaning or purpose, whatever it is, we have these things within us, and there's just something that we feel is missing, and we try to fill that infinite abyss or that God-shaped hole that we have within our souls. We're trying to fill that with a bunch of stuff, but none of it works if we're doing it from our surroundings, if we're doing it for creation, because only God fits into that hole to bring us acceptance and love and meaning and purpose and fulfillment. God is the only thing that can fulfill that void, that infinite abyss that is within us. And that's what Blaise Pascal is talking about. So some modern writers have used this term, this God-shaped hole that we have within our souls that only God can fill. That only God can fill. And this idea can be traced back even further than 1670. Between 397 and 400 AD, St. Augustine of Hippo wrote what has become known simply as Confessions. And in this collection of 13 books, St. Augustine writes these words in the first paragraph of his first book. Thou awakest us to delight in thy praise, for thou madest us for thyself, and our heart is restless until it repose in thee. That's an old English translation. If that confused you a little bit, that's okay. It confuses me a little bit too. So permit me to translate into something that would be a little more contemporary. And here's what Augustine is saying. God, allow us to delight in praising you, for you have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find rest in you. Our hearts are restless until they find rest in you. Augustine is basically writing the same thing that Pascal wrote, although I suppose it'd be the other way around since Augustine wrote it first. But our hearts are restless. They are longing for something. They are searching for something. They desire something. They want love, acceptance, peace. Our hearts want joy. We are longing for these things, and our hearts are restless. We cannot find those things to fulfill us until we turn to God, and then our hearts can find rest. We have a desire within our hearts, a God-shaped hole that can be filled by nothing else but God, that brings us fulfillment, that brings us joy, that brings us peace, that brings us acceptance, love, that brings us all those things that we are longing for. We have a desire that cannot be filled by anything else other than the living God of the universe. Zema Blue's heart is restless because he has not yet found rest in God. Have you? Back to the episode, and since Zema was still unsatisfied, he does some pretty extreme stuff. But before we find out what he does, him and Claire meet, and Zema is tall. He is super, super tall. I mean, he looks like he's almost 10 feet tall. He's super thin, has like this metallic looking kind of skin. He's humanoid, but he doesn't look really natural. And then we hear of all of Zema's transformations on the planet Kharkov 8, where you can get illicit cybernetic modification. Zema underwent radical biological procedures that allowed him to tolerate extreme environments without the need of a suit for protection. So his eyes can now see in any known spectrum of color. He can walk in lava. He doesn't breathe oxygen anymore, so he can go underwater. And then Claire tells us, and so he ventured forth to commune with the cosmos. But what Zema eventually realized is that the cosmos was already speaking in its own truth, far, far better than he ever could have. Again, I don't know how the cosmos does that. And we're not told what this truth of the cosmos is or how the cosmos is able to communicate, but the cosmos is apparently speaking its own truth far, far better than Zema ever could. So it seems here in some way that perhaps its interpretation is up for debate in what this means, but and what the truth of the cosmos is, but truth is truth. We've already discussed this in previous episodes, looking at what truth is and what truth is not. So whatever is true must be true. Truth is truly objective. Opinion is subjective. We've gone into that before, but truth is objective. Truth is truth no matter what. So here we have the cosmos speaking its own truth, which leans towards the idea of a rejection of objective truth, but it's absurd to object, to reject objective truth. You can't do it. It doesn't make sense, because what is true is always true. That's what truth is. But then Zima tells Claire, "My search for truth has led me here to what will be my final piece. At last, I understand the thing I sought through my art." Again, truth here seems to be, the idea of objective truth seems to be rejected here. Again, that's not the way truth is. Opinions are the ones that are subjective. Truth is not, but that's what it seems to be here, as Zima talks about, "My search for truth has led me here. This is what my truth is." Zima then goes on to explain who he truly is. He's not a person who has undergone cybernetic modifications, no, no. It turns out he is a robot who has undergone humanization, I guess you might say, a robot who has undergone humanization modifications. And Zima is building a swimming pool, the swimming pool that he first remembers. So Zima started out a woman who made robots as a hobby. She made a robot to clean her swimming pool. And that's what Zima Blue started out as a pool cleaning robot. But eventually there were some upgrades. And then the original woman who made him passed away, and he got passed to somebody else who gave him more of an upgrade, and experimental hardware and software was used in Zima. So eventually, after a series of upgrades, new owners, he goes from being a pool cleaning robot to a very humanoid looking robot that we see now, and somebody who apparently can think, and somebody who can reason and has some sort of a conscious. Through this process, Zima has become more and more aware, and again, it appears he has developed some sort of consciousness, some kind of ability to be conscious on some kind of level. But the pool that Zima is building is the very pool that he first started in as a baby robot, I guess you would say, where he first started. He is rebuilding the pool that he first remembers. And Claire says, "You're a man with machine parts, not a machine that thinks it's a man." But Zima responds, "Sometimes it's difficult for even me to understand what I've become, and harder still to remember what I once was." It seems here to me that Zima has a longing to be what he once was, to go back to what he was created for. People, we have that desire too. That God-shaped hole in our soul that longs for love and acceptance and meaning and purpose, and to be in a part of something that is bigger than ourselves, to be in a relationship with God. I think that's what we're truly longing for, whether you say that or not or agree. That's what we're longing for, and that's what can bring that fulfillment to those desires that are within our hearts. We have those desires because we were created to be in a relationship with God. We were created to be in a relationship with God, and those longings and desires that we have, when that relationship with God was broken through sin, that's when those longings and desires came within our heart, because sin had broken that relationship, and then we lost something. We lost that original intention that God had intended for us to be in relationship with him and to be loved and accepted and fulfilled and have meaning and purpose. We lost that, but we want to get it back. We want to be what we once were. We want to get that back. We go back to the episode, and the Blue that Zima Blue first saw was, well, you guessed it, Zima Blue. That was the color of tiles that was in the pool that he was cleaning. So it's the first thing that he remembers is seeing those. And Zima explained this is where he started, and that cleaning the pool tiles was all he knew and all he needed to know. Now it might seem, here it seems to me, that life has become complicated, actually very complicated for Zima Blue. He has got fame and money and makes these big art projects and goes and paints asteroid belts and goes and paints planets and all these different kinds of things. He goes on a search throughout the cosmos, goes and gets all these modifications so he can walk through lava or swim underwater or not need to breathe with a suit, all these kinds of things. And for for Zima Blue, life has become very complicated. It's become very busy. He's got a lot of pressure that's on him. He's got a lot of all these different kinds of things to meet. But I think what Zima Blue is longing for, what he is looking for, is what many of us are looking for today. Simplicity. To not be so busy. To not have so much stuff to do. To not even have so much stuff in terms of possessions that weigh us down. I think what he is looking for is to live simply. Perhaps many of us have that longing too. In his book, With Unveiled Faces, Keith Drury covers a number of spiritual disciplines. And one of them in the book is the discipline of simplicity. Now, a spiritual discipline is something we intentionally do or do not do to become more like Jesus. So a spiritual discipline, something we intentionally do to become more like Jesus, we read the Bible. We're reading the scriptures to see who Jesus is to become more like him. What is something we do not do that's a spiritual discipline in order to become more like Jesus? We fast. We abstain from food we do not eat as a means of spiritual discipline. Fasting, something that's been done before even Jesus' time, we are fasting to become more like Jesus. So a spiritual discipline is something we intentionally do or do not do to become more like Jesus. But of simplicity as a spiritual discipline, Drury writes this. It is intentionally paring down our lifestyle towards the essentials to free ourselves from the tyranny of things and focus more on spiritual life. Fewer disciplines go more against the grain of our culture, yet provide greater freedom than this one. In simplicity, we abstain from material access, from collecting things as if they provide happiness and meaning. Only God can give us the happiness and meaning we crave. Oh, that's so relevant for today in 2022. It is so relevant for that today. And we see this. We see there's a small house movement. There's a simplicity movement where people want to pare down and get rid of stuff and simplify their lives in terms of possessions and time and commitments. And that is because stuff, money, possessions, a big house, a high-paying job, status, a white picket fence, the American dream. It does not and will not and cannot fulfill the desires of your soul. And we get so bogged down with stuff. And we get so bogged down with all this stuff. And what it does is it does not give us the freedom that it is promised. But it makes us prisoners. Held captive by needing the best and the newest and to climb the ladder in an unfulfilling attempt to keep up with the Joneses. Where do you need to practice the spiritual discipline of simplicity today? That's what Zima Blue is longing for. He's longing for the simpler life where he can just go and clean a pool and be content and be happy with that instead of all this other stuff that's just made his life so complicated. Where is your life getting complicated? How do you need to intentionally pare down your life? Pare down your lifestyle towards the essentials to free you from the tyranny of things so that you can focus more on spiritual life. How can you practice the spiritual discipline of simplicity? Back to the episode, and Zima has rebuilt the pool he was first in. The first pool... And thousands of people are on hand to see what this next great piece of art is going to be that Zima Blue is about to unveil. And Zima walks out to the pool and he says, I will immerse myself. And as I do, I will slowly shut down my higher brain functions. He jumps into the pool and he starts to shut his outer layer of metal covering or skin, whatever that may be. And then he says, unmaking myself. As his arms come off and his legs and chest and abdomen separate from his head and his head separate. And then he continues, leaving just enough to appreciate my surroundings. And then from out of his chest, Zima emerges just as he first began, a pool cleaning robot. And then he says this, to extract some simple pleasure from the execution of a task well done. My search for truth is finished at last. I am going home. And that is how this short but impactful episode ends. So let's discuss the ending here. It seems that Zima Blue has found his truth again. Seems a bit of a subjective understanding of truth, but truth is always objective, never subjective. The only thing subjective is opinions again. But again, in this episode, it seems to embrace the philosophy of subjective truth. But a few other things stand out to me here about this. First of all, it seems that Zima has found his truth not by searching the cosmos or by looking to others or talking to someone else or something out there that is true. He has found his truth by looking inward to himself, not outward towards anything else. Now, that may be a very popular idea these days. Sayings like, search your heart, find and follow your truth, look within, you're strong enough. All those kinds of things. All those kinds of things and statements and uplifting sayings like, that are along those lines that we see, they are just simply not true and not good advice. Especially when you consider the sin nature that we are born with. Right? That we are all born with a sinful nature within us. So, well, why are we going to look internally to find out what is true and do this in our own strength when we are fallen people? When we have been, you know, when we live in a fallen world and are fallen people, when sin has come in and has messed some things up in our hearts and in our lives and the way that we feel about things, why are we going to look internally to try to find truth? That's not where we need to look. We need to look to God. We need to look not internally, but externally. We look to God, who then, when we cooperate with him, makes us a new creation, and he continues to renew us as we continue to look towards him. And then when he is within us, dwelling within us, the Holy Spirit, as the temple of the Holy Spirit, when the Holy Spirit comes and dwells within us, then we have that internal communication where we can look for truth. But it's ultimately not looking for truth inside myself. It's looking for truth where truth is found. God. So Zima looks within himself for his own truth, but that is a very dangerous idea and does not always lead to truth and is not the best place to look. Do not look internally, but look externally towards God. Second, there is something within Zima that wants to go back to what he was originally intended to be. There's something drawing him back to what his original purpose was. I think there's something similar within us. We touched on this a little bit earlier, but we'll just expand on it here a bit. The people were created to be in a relationship with God. People were created to be in a personal relationship with God, living in perfection without sin. And we long for that original intention that God created us with. We long for God and that relationship, and our hearts are restless until we find rest in God. We long to know God and to be known by God, all of us, even if you don't think so, or if you say you don't see this, or you don't understand how that is. Why do we have a longing to be loved? Why do we have a longing to be accepted? Why do we have a longing to be something, a part of something that is bigger than ourselves? Why do we feel guilt when we do something wrong? Why do we have a desire to be forgiven? Why do we feel those things? Why do we feel like something is missing and we just need to be fulfilled? Because we were originally created to be in relationship with God and not feel those things, but sin has come in and we have fallen. We are a fallen race. So we feel those things, but we long to go back to the original intention that God had for us, to go back to what people were created for, to be in relationship with God as part of his family. That's what people were created for. It's what I call the original intention of people, and we want it. We still want it. We long for it today. We long to return to that original intention that God had. That is what we want, and that is what we desire. We want to go back, and we want to be what we were created to be, a part of God's family, accepted and loved by him. I really enjoyed looking at this episode. Again, only about 8 minutes long, but it's such a visually beautiful episode and also allowed us to talk about a lot of interesting things within here. And that is it for the Love, Death, and Robots episode, Zima Blue, where we have discussed purpose and meaning, people being the pinnacle of God's creation, how people have a God-shaped hole in their soul, simplicity, original intention, and more. This was truly a fun little 8-minute story or so, and I've spent even more time talking about it than I thought I would. I didn't think I'd spend this long looking at it when I first watched this, but the more I thought about it and prepared for it and wrote this, like, there's just so many things that came out with richness to this that we can see to relate to theological truth within this. Again, we search for truth in such simple tales as these, and in Zima Blue, we find it. There's a lot here. This is by far my favorite Death, Love, and Robots episode. Again, the only one that is appropriate for us to watch content-wise. And I'm not even sure it's fair to say this is my favorite episode because I haven't watched all of the episodes all the way through. So, but anyway, it's a favorite one, my favorite one that I've seen all the way through. I really enjoy this one and think that it was something that's really worth listening to. And I hope you've enjoyed it as well. I know this is our shortest episode, but this is a season of shorts. So you may get some short up. You will get some short episodes here as we continue through this season as we go on. So I hope you enjoyed this. Is there, if you've seen this episode, is there something that I missed? Is there something that stood out to you, or did you like this episode? What did you think of it? I would love to hear your feedback. So thank you for listening. It is good to be back with you for this season. I truly appreciate it. To reach out to me or to follow me on social media, you can go to Theology and Sci-Fi, the podcast on Facebook, or you could go to Twitter or Instagram at Theology and Sci-Fi, or email me at theologyandscifi@gmail.com. And again, we spell sci-fi the correct way around here, S-C-I-F-I. So thank you for listening. Again, I just want to encourage you to, when you are looking at episodes, when you're reading books, when you're watching TV shows or movies, whatever it may be, look for the theological truths within that you can relate to somebody else so that you can open these conversations as an opportunity to share your faith. And if you have a suggestion for a TV show episode, or if you have a favorite TV, sci-fi TV series, or if you know of a short story that you would like me to look at this season, I encourage you to reach out to me and let me know. I would love to take a look at something that you would suggest. So I've really enjoyed this episode, Zima Blue. It's worth going and checking out if you haven't, and brings to mind just a lot of different theological things for me to be able to relate. So I really appreciated this episode, and I hope you did too. Again, thanks for listening. I truly appreciate it, and I hope that you tell a friend or two. Thank you. For Theology and Sci-Fi, I am Derek V. Trout. Some people find me intimidating, but they quickly get over it.